I'm Rachel Otwell for NPR Illinois. Coming up is a conversation with Desiree Stage. She's based in Philadelphia. She's a public speaker, a suicide attempt survivor, and an artist and writer, among other things. She now has an exhibition of photography and oral history at the UIS Visual Arts Gallery, which is on display through October 19th. It's called Live Through This. She joined me in studio on the same day as the reception to talk more about her life and her work.
I had experience with suicide from a really young age. We lost a family friend when I was in the single digits. And I remember the way my family talked about it, you know, with this shame and this kind of these hushed tones and telling me how he did it and, you know, who he left behind. And it just felt heavy. And it's one of my earlier memories. And then later, when I switched from middle school to high school, I had a really difficult time with the transition. I experienced depression for the first time, and it, you know, just kind of hit me like a ton of bricks. I didn't know what was going on. You know, the hormones plus depression plus all this stuff is really difficult. Around that time, I started questioning my sexuality. There was a lot going on. And then when I was 15, one of my friends took his own life. And I was devastated. Turns out, I went back and read my journals recently. I was already thinking of suicide when he died. You know, fast forward several years, when I was 23, I ended up attempting to take my own life. So in the healing process, I'd say about 4 years later, a lot of other things happened, but about 4 years later, I decided that I wanted to do something about it. I had gone to college. I was a psych major, got into a PhD program, wanted to do research on suicide, and they said no. They said it was too taboo, and so I left. I moved to New York, taught myself photography, and it was at that point, 3 years into a photography career, that I said, okay, I'm in a place where I can do something. And I'm gonna do it with my camera instead of science. So I knew that I wanted it to be about suicide, but I didn't know quite what. And the more kind of Googling I was doing, looking for projects, you know, about suicide, portrait projects about suicide, I couldn't find anything about experiences as a suicide attempt survivor. I couldn't find anyone like me. I was finding plenty of stuff about suicide loss survivors, and certainly that's a part of my identity, but that wasn't what I was looking for. And I just noticed that complete dearth of humanity. You know, what happened to the people who lived? Where were they? And that's where I decided I would focus.
And that's evident in the exhibition that will be at the UIS Visual Arts Gallery. It will be on display through October 19th. Give us a sense of what people will be looking at when they come into the gallery.
So my work is portrait and oral history based. When I meet with somebody, I sit with them for about an hour and a half, and I ask them, you know, to tell me their stories, their experiences with suicidality, with living through a suicide attempt, what happens after, how do you keep going? And after we have that conversation, I make their portrait. So what you're seeing in the gallery is 8 large-scale portraits, along with some quotes from their interviews, and then there are 2 tables of smaller portraits, and there are, I want to say, about 125 of them. So we've got a large portion of the body of work on display. I've interviewed 182 suicide attempt survivors in 35 cities across the United States.
Wow. Well, and so obviously there's a diverse range of stories there. Was there anything, though, maybe some common refrain that you heard along the way?
So all of this work lives on the internet at livethroughthis.org. And these people sign up for this knowing that their name is going to go on the internet, their face is going to go on the internet, and a lot of personal information about them is going to go on the internet. And so sometimes I'll say, hey, you know, what made you decide to share your story with me? And I don't think I've received an answer other than I just want to help one other person. So it's about wanting to help. It's about wanting other people to live and to know that they're not alone, no matter what they're going through.
And you've touched on it, but I wonder if you can address still the stigma surrounding suicide and if you've seen any changes through your work. Obviously, you're trying to make it something that can be talked about more openly.
Yeah. Since I started getting involved in the suicide prevention field in about 2014, I was doing this work for 4 years before I even started interfacing with professionals. And when I got there, I found that a lot of the mental health professionals still held, I don't know if animosity is the right word, but certainly a distrust of people who have had these experiences as experts over our own bodies and over our own minds. And I'm watching that fade the more portraits and stories that I put up, the more that I go and talk to people. For a long time, we were so absent. We were absent in the narratives. We were anonymous when there were narratives. We were reduced to statistics. Now that they're seeing people in front of them who are saying, hey, I lived through this. Here I am. Here's what I do with my life now. I think they're able to better connect to us as human beings rather than clients or patients. You know, when we're taken out of the context they're used to, they have to look at us differently.
And then how do you take care of your own mental health dealing with such a heavy topic day in and day out?
Very carefully. I'm not the best at it. Self-care is certainly not my best skill, but it is something I'm constantly striving to be better at. I go to a therapist regularly. I love my therapist. I finally found a therapist I have a good rapport with. And I've gotten better at noticing when I'm hitting a wall and walking away and telling myself that it's okay. It's okay to take some time and go sit down, play with the dogs, read a book, watch a movie, and then come back to it. Because the thing about feelings, any feelings, and including suicidal feelings, is if you give them time, they're going to dissipate. So you sit with them, let them flow through you, do whatever you can to distract yourself, and then move on. And that's much easier said than done.
So we've been talking about suicide and how it's changed, the stigma about it especially has changed throughout the years. Another thing that's changed is how professionals in the field talk about it. Tell us a little bit about the language that's used these days.
Yeah, the language is pretty ever-evolving, I would say, but we've definitely moved away from the phrase commit suicide because it has so many colorful implications. You know, it implies sin, crime, pathology. And for me, when I think about it, I want to move people toward a place of neutrality. You know, suicide is a part of life, whether we want it to be or not. And so the phrase that the suicide prevention field has picked up is died by suicide or died from suicide. And it's just much more objective. You know, you still have the manner of death, but it's not fraught with all of these colorful implications. And I think that when we use words like that, it's not necessarily that it's to be politically correct, but it's to move thinking toward the person affected by it. You know, the person who dies by suicide is a person who felt hopeless, who had a utter futility in their minds, who was despairing and who was in a lot of pain. And I think that's worth feeling compassion for. And so the change in language has been really huge, and I think it does help a lot.
Desiree L. Stage, thank you so much for taking the time to come to Springfield to show your work and talk about it and to come into our studios to talk with me. Before I let you go, I wanted to ask about how you cope when people do end up dying because of suicide. Project Semicolon, for example, was spearheaded by founder Amy Bluhl, who had previously attempted suicide. She ended up passing away because of it. She was a huge inspiration to a lot of people who had similar struggles throughout their life. But I'm wondering about how the community copes after a loss like that. And then I'm also thinking about Chester Bennington of Linkin Park. He earlier this summer died from suicide, and his wife not too long ago came out with some videos that had been taken just days before his death, where he is just being goofy, you know, saying, look how someone who can seem happy on the outside can also be struggling with these inner conflicts that other people might not even know about. So I'm just wondering how, again, just how within the kind of community you're so ingrained in, trying to prevent these losses, just what your reactions to those deaths might be.
With my own experience, I don't feel that I will ever be free of suicide. I think it's a part of me and how I think. I have suicidal thoughts, you know, they come and go. I just know how to deal with them better now, because I've had a lot of practice. But, you know, when you have someone like Amy Bluhl, who started Project Semicolon, she was pretty open about her struggles. And the same with Chester Bennington. You know, maybe he was happy in the days before his death, but his music, if you listen to the lyrics, he clearly struggled. You know, that was something that was there over a course of years for both of those people. And on one day, for whatever reason, the bad overpowered the good in their lives, and no one was there to save them, you know, and that's not anybody's fault, but it happens.
A lot of us do know somebody who passed because of suicide. Do you have any insight as far as how to honor those memories without the kind of shame that you mentioned?
Yeah, I think the best way to honor those memories is to remember them who they were as people rather than how they died. Certainly, how they died plays a big role in how we view them, or, you know, our guilt, our own shame, you know, did I do enough? But no matter how much you did, it wasn't enough. They're not here. And so you just have to remember that person you loved and remember them in the way that you love them, who they were when they were alive. And I think that's the best way to honor them.